Hey everyone, it's Carvel, and before we get into this episode, I want to ask you a favor. Throughout this series, we've talked a lot about how Fred Rogers has helped show us how to make the world a kinder place, a better place, but now we want to hear from you. We want to hear a story about when someone in your life showed you what it means to be a helper. Maybe it's someone in your family or someone in your community or someone that you haven't seen since you were a kid, but that you still think about something they did to help you. Whoever they are, wherever they are, however they're helping, we want to hear about it. So give us a call at 336-515-0529. Again, that's 336-515-0529. And tell us a story about someone who has shown you how to be a helper, and we might just play it on an upcoming episode. Again, that number is 336-515-0529, or you can tweet your story with the hashtag #FindingFred. Okay, now let's start the show.
Вот это наша студия.
This is our studio.
Well, it's very much like the place we make our television visit.
It's 1987, and Mr. Rogers is in Moscow.
Роджерс, у нас есть рояль.
We have the piano here.
Хотите поиграть?
Would you like to play the piano?
Of course I would. I love to touch a piano wherever I go.
Где бы я ни был, я все время хочу играть на фортепиано.
Won't you be my neighbor? Будешь ты мой, будешь ты мой, будешь ли ты мой, Саша?
Браво.
The Soviet Union had just begun opening up dialogue with the U.S., and that, somehow, landed Mr. Rogers on the set of Goodnight Little Ones, the USSR's longest-running children's program.
Back then, there was no television except for one channel that was played on in Russian, which I couldn't understand, mostly the news, propaganda. And then there was a childhood program that played at night that I also couldn't understand.
Christoph Putzel was an American kid living in Moscow at the time.
Both my parents were journalists. They were assigned to cover what ended up being the collapse of the Soviet Union. My parents' job was to make sense of a place that didn't make a lot of sense, where information was controlled.
Christoph's father was the bureau chief for the Associated Press. His mother was the deputy bureau chief for Time magazine. They moved to Moscow in 1987 and took 7-year-old Christoph and his sister along with them.
My parents had told me that the biggest toy store in the entire Soviet Union was across the street from our house. This was the way they tempted me to go there and agree to this whole thing as a 7-year-old. And let me tell you, it was the first time I've ever gone to a toy store and there was nothing I wanted to buy because there was nothing on the shelves. There was, I think, shoes, some clothes, and a couple tin toy things and some really complicated models that I think were for adults. And that was it. This is the biggest toy store in the Soviet Union. There's nothing I wanted.
I'm Carvel Wallace, and this is Finding Fred, a podcast about Fred Rogers from iHeartMedia and Fatherly in partnership with Transmitter Media. We often talk about how adaptable kids are, but Christoph says the move to Moscow was really hard.
Frankly, I was pretty depressed. You just have to understand just how hard Russia was in the 80s, especially for a kid, you know, it being so cold, dark, no access to stuff. Sometimes friends would record like tapes, the cassette tapes, and then mail them, and I'd listen to their voices. We didn't live in an embassy. We lived in a 800 square foot apartment. My mom, my dad, my sister, myself, and our golden retriever. Only golden retriever in the entire Soviet Union. People thought that it was a lion. Our apartment was bugged because the KGB always kept a close eye on them. And they would follow us anytime we were going outside of the city. They would constantly try to attempt to set up my parents to see if they were actually spies. And always monitored whatever stories they were working on.
There was always somebody watching, and nothing to watch on TV. No familiar cultural touchstones like Sesame Street or 3-2-1 Contact.
So I would watch the same VHS tapes over and over and over again that people would mail from the U.S.
Do not
They would just tape whatever was on TV and mail it. We'd get it 3, 4, 5 months later, if we got it at all. And those were like gold.
I like you, yes I do. I like you, Y-O-U.
And on a few of those precious VHS tapes were old episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Certainly do. Well, I'm glad you were with me on my swing.
So Mr. Rogers in Moscow was big news, and Christoph's parents managed to get word to Fred, telling him about their depressed kid. And for Fred Rogers, a note about a sad child was like the bat signal.
There was one day when my parents told me to make sure I was home for dinner, which I always was, but I remember being weird. They're like, no, there's a special dinner tonight. I just remember a knock on the door, and I'd sort of gotten used to being let down by surprises of them trying to like cheer us up in communist Moscow, you know? And I opened the door, and there's Mr. Rogers in his cardigan and the blue shoes. And my jaw apparently just dropped. I remember just being awestruck. I didn't understand why Mr. Rogers was at my door. I grew up watching Mr. Rogers. I knew every character. I'd probably seen every episode, at least for that time frame. And so there I was, and he walks in the door, and he gets down to my eye level and shakes my hand and introduces himself as Fred Rogers and asked what my name was. And I don't even know if I could get the words out of my mouth, because it's Mr. Rogers in the apartment, you know? And it was just him on his own.
He was just by himself?
Just by himself. I think it was the first time in my life where I felt seen by an adult. Like, when he got down to my eye level, introduced himself, and looked me in the eye. Of course I've had adults introduce themselves to me a million times up until that point and ask me what my name was. But the way that he looked at me, I felt like he saw me. Then he came into the living room and we sat down and he opened up his suitcase. He had a suitcase with him. I feel like it was a briefcase, but it must have been bigger than that. And he opens it up. And they're all the puppets. I had never put together that Mr. Rogers did the voices. I didn't know. And so suddenly they were talking and I had King Friday and X the Owl in my on my couch. This is a surreal moment for a child, you know? And I think what just really struck me about it was how normal it felt. I mean, not normal. What's the word? While it felt surreal, it felt like I was in the land of make-believe suddenly. My couch suddenly turned into that in my apartment. And it was just like the show. I mean, he was wearing the same stuff. This isn't a, like, this isn't a set.
Wasn't like backstage
no,
Fred Rogers.
He had the cardigan on and the blue shoes. Yeah. Like,
I mean, first of all, I'm just really struck by the kind of person you have to be, the kind of self-possession you have to just walk into some strangers' houses and spend the evening with them. Like, I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I'm like ostensibly my job is to be charismatic in public, and I still don't know if I would know how to just go into someone's house with nothing but myself and a suitcase of puppets.
Absolutely.
And spend the evening with them and their family. I have kids, and oftentimes I think about the ways in which illusions are created for them and also shattered for them.
Mm.
And so it's a tale as old as time that, like, the kid has someone that they have idolized on television, then they meet them, and then the person's not who they thought they were, and then they're crushed. And you had the opposite experience. You sort of thought this guy was fine, and then you meet him, and you find out that he's exactly who, as good as he says he is. But I wonder if you ever felt let down later.
Mom one time took me to the set of Sesame Street because she was working on a story for Time magazine. Yeah. And I went and I was horrified because Big Bird was walking around without the top, you know, just the legs. And the Muppets were all like, you know, like lying there like corpses. And they'd warned my mom. They said, you know, to Sesame Street's credit, they said, we don't usually encourage children to come here. And it was a little jarring. But that wasn't the case with Mr. Rogers.
More from Christoph in just a moment. Mr. Rogers' visit has stuck with Christoph. It's not just that Mr. Rogers got down on one knee and looked him in the eye, or that he got to play with King Friday and X the Owl. It's the kindness of Mr. Rogers, the effort Fred made in the midst of a busy trip to help a kid.
Like, I mean, just think about this for a second. He went all the way across town in a city he didn't know, which is a hard place to get around, to meet a family that he didn't know, just because he heard that there were some kids that were kind of having a tough time.
So why do you think he did that?
That's a really good question. I think that he heard that there were some kids that grew up watching the show and were having, I think, a tough time. There wasn't a whole lot of stuff to look forward to, and that it would be amazing if he would meet them. And he apparently just jumped at the opportunity and said, of course, you know. You can imagine the number of people that might want to meet Fred Rogers, or I don't know, maybe no one asked him. Yeah, he just came and did it. And he spent like real time. He like sat on the couch and did a whole puppet show, and I played with them. Like, I got to hold, I mean, that was crazy. I mean, I got to hold the king and the owl and the cat and like everything. Like, and then he had dinner with us, and then we drove him back to the American Embassy where he was staying. And so I sat in the back seat of our station wagon. It was one of the only Subarus in the entire Soviet Union. And we sat in the back seat, and I just sat there with Mr. Rogers as we drove him across town and drove him to the front of the American Embassy. Oh, and he was asking questions because he didn't know anything about Moscow. So when we're driving, he was asking questions about, what's this? What's this? I knew the answers. Like, I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's the monument to Yuri Gagarin. He was like, oh, that's interesting. Or do you like space? I was like, yeah, I like space. I remember just wanting, like, always fantasizing about friends coming so I could tell them about what this place was like. And I'd be like, I know this looks weird, but look at this. This is, you know, look, yes, it's normal to see like an entire army going down the street, you know, like, oh yeah, we see tanks all the time. Oh yeah, they parade these missiles around constantly. Like, I know it looks nuts, but that's what life is here. And it never happened because no one ever came to visit. And I got to give that tour to Mr. Rogers. He must have known that just by him being there, this was, had suddenly transformed Moscow, a place that I hated as a child, into the most magical place I'd ever been, and then got to ride through Moscow with Mr. Rogers and point out all this stuff. I mean, I still look back at that as like, it was just magical.
When I was a kid, as odd as it sounds, I did the exact same thing. I imagined Ricky Ricardo, for some reason, time traveling from the 1950s to my childhood in the 80s and letting me explain everything to him, Walkman and Pac-Man and Prince. I think now that that was a cure for a kind of loneliness that I felt, that Christoph felt, that maybe a lot of kids feel. This world is so big and so many things are happening to us all the time. We feel sometimes like we're little helpless creatures in the midst of all of it. So maybe it's just really nice to think that there's someone somewhere who cares what you, like specifically you, are seeing and experiencing. That's the gift that Fred Rogers gave to Christoph that night. And maybe that's the gift he gave to all of us. You know, I have this really, this weird question that's been on my mind. I think a lot about good people and what makes a good person. And so much of what Fred Rogers was about ways and systems and methods for being a good person. And I keep returning to, why isn't everyone like that? I want to ask you first, do you think of yourself as a good person?
I do, but I think it's taken a lot of time and struggle and experiences with not always being the best person, interactions with not always the best people, but then also the experience of having genuine connection and experiences with people that I consider really good. Mm-hmm. And I think that has helped me become a better person and someone I'm still striving to be.
Because I guess I wonder, I mean, I have this obvious question, which is why isn't everyone like Fred Rogers? Like,
yeah.
Why, like, I assume that you don't think of yourself as being capable of being what he was or doing what he does. And I guess I want to know what you feel like in your own life stands in your way.
It's a really good question. I don't know. You know, like, why? I think that I just might not have the patience that he had for people. You know, I think just the, at least not always, you know, I think I have my moments and I've certainly been inspired by him and this memory and I love what I do for a living. But for someone to be like that all the time, to have everyone who's ever had an interaction with you to just feel seen and heard while also like embraced and almost hugged in a way, even if he wasn't doing that physically. Mm-hmm. I doubt that the people in my life would say that I'm like that. You know, but what gets in my way? You know, I guess that I think probably cynicism. Huh. You know, I think I've struggled a lot with this question of like, what is like, just unconditional love and how do you practice that even with everybody? Yeah. So I'm working on a podcast right now about my relationship with one of the world's most wanted terrorists. And I had a connection with this guy who was wanted by, you know, everyone in the world, pretty much the CIA, the State Department, the FBI, the African Union. He had a $5 million bounty on his head and I was the only one who knew where he was. And he would call me in the middle of the night just to chat. Because he just wanted to connect with another human being towards the end. And while he was hoping I could help keep him alive, when I couldn't do that, we would just talk. And it started as just a great scoop for me, but then came this person that I couldn't help but start caring about. And that gets really confusing, you know, especially when it's somebody that has done terrible things, you know, or supposedly done terrible things, or that's supposed to be an enemy or somebody that you hate. Or somebody that deserves to be killed. And I find all human beings, people, everyone, you know, is worthy of being listened to and being and spoken to. It doesn't mean take in all their BS. It doesn't mean like, you know, set yourself up to be abused or taken advantage of. But I think everyone, all any of us just want us to be loved and to be heard and to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that your presence is the greatest gift you can give somebody. I just think that's what I believe is just actually learning how to be genuinely present. Like in that moment that he came down and sat and just like looked me in the eye, asked me a genuine question, and then just didn't feel like he felt he needed to be anywhere else. Mm-hmm. That's presence. And I feel like when you can give that to another human, that's the best gift you can give somebody. And I think what keeps us, and at least I can speak to myself, what keeps us from doing that is it's just really hard to be present. You know, I think that we, our minds are scattered with our wants of what we think we want, what our desires are, what we, the ways that we think we're going to get it, our relationship to the world, how we think the world perceives us. We care a lot about a lot of stuff that usually isn't relevant. And I think that's what gets in the way.
I want to ask you about the world as it currently stands. Mm. And like the last thing he did on television was a public service announcement after 9/11. Mm. That was the last time we saw him on TV. And he died soon after that. And when I watch that footage, I often feel like I'm watching a person who has ultimately been outmatched by just the huge well of capacity of for badness among people. And when I look at the world today, it does seem like so much of that badness has like gained energy and momentum and focus and force and push. And I wonder, you're a journalist, your job is to investigate all, to investigate the human condition via our individual stories and the stories you pursue. And I wonder, how do I even frame this question? Do you think, A, do you think his impact can be felt? And B, do you think it's enough?
God, it's an intense question. I think that it's up to us to, I think it's up to us to allow his impact to be felt. And what I mean by that is, look, eventually we can't be relying on Fred Rogers, especially after he's dead. We have to be Fred Rogers. I mean, we're grown up. You know, like I'm about to be 40. I was watching Mr. Rogers as a kid. It's time for me to be Mr. Rogers. You know, it's time for all of us to be Mr. Rogers, especially now. It is crazy because if we don't, then we really are up Schitt's Creek. You know, like we are in a time right now where people are so cynical and scared and frankly acting bananas. All of us, whether you want to blame the people that are making you bananas or your bananas or whatever it is, that I think we all just need those quiet moments of reflection, and it's our job to embody it. I mean, look, we can't, that's another reason, like, we can't idealize him either, in the sense where, like, you know, he's gone. What we have to do is take his teachings and try to embody those ourselves so you know, we can evolve and become one of our own version of that love that he was able to embody, because that is what I think the world could really use right now. And we can't be looking for a savior or I think be just sad over one, like, hey, there was one guy that was really good at this once. Like, why go and hang out with a kid you've never met or a family in, you know, 1987 in Russia? Who's having a tough time? Because he can. Because he had the ability to.
Christoph still has a photo of that night. There's Fred on the couch with X the owl, and there's Christoph, beaming.
When you genuinely learn how to listen, and you're genuinely interested in somebody just because they're them, not because of any other reason. That I think I got from just that interaction. I think that's what stayed with me. Screw Moscow.
Next time.
When Fred tells us that we are special, he meant that there's something deep down inside each of us, not just some of us, but each of us, without which humanity cannot survive.
Finding Fred is produced by Transmitter Media. Our team is Dan O'Donnell, Jordan Bailey, and Maddie Foley. Our editor is Sarah Nix. The executive producer for Transmitter Media is Greta Cohn. Executive producers at Fatherly are Simon Isaacs and Andrew Berman. Thanks to the team at iHeartMedia, and also thanks to Christoph Putzel. Our show is mixed by Rick Kwan, music by Blue Dot Sessions and Allison Leighton Brown. If you like what you're hearing, rate the show, review the show, and tell a friend. I'm Carvel Wallace. Thank you for listening.